This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for October 13th, 2016. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we speak with community and labor organizer Jack McKay about a forum next week on food security and the minimum wage. And we speak with Hillary Lister about the proposed Juniper Ridge landfill. The Bureau of Environmental Protection holds its public hearing on Tuesday. First, we speak with Jack McKay, director of the Brewer-based organization Food and Medicine and president of the Eastern Maine Labor Council. Both organizations are participating in a forum on food security and the minimum wage on Wednesday, October 19th, from 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning at the Bangor Public Library. Welcome back to the program, Jack McKay.
Thank you.
So we wanted to speak with you today about a forum coming up next week on food security and the minimum wage, and use this as a platform to talk about the issues that will be discussed at that forum, again, Wednesday, October 19th. In your materials that you sent out, talked about this last decade in Maine has been the worst for food security, a drop from Maine being 33rd to 3rd. Can you talk with us about what's been going on in the state and why?
I'm happy to. And yeah, I'm really excited about the forum coming up this Wednesday, the 19th. What has happened in Maine is just astounding. According to the United States Department of Agriculture study on the measure of very low food security, for the period of 2002 to 2004, Maine ranked, we were tied for 33rd of the nation, which is fairly respectable. There's 32 other states who are worse than us. Move forward to the period of 2012 to 2014, Maine is now the third worst in this measure of very low food security. We're outpaced by only, I think it's Missouri and Arkansas. And this is just a tremendous, and really horrific change in the condition of so many families and individuals across our state.
And why is it that what changes have occurred that have precipitated this? Now or later, if you want to define what food security is and what impacts we've been seeing, I know you've outlined that many administrative measures by the LePage administration have impacted low-income families in our state to make this precipitous drop.
Yes. Well, Maine is, for the past year and for the past 5 years, Maine has been, the roles of people on SNAP has diminished.
And SNAP is the EBT, or also known as food stamps.
Correct, thank you. And it's diminished primarily because of measures that the LePage administration has done administratively. In other words, they've done it through the administration and not through the legislature. They've sort of gone after SNAP benefits through the legislature, and they've been largely blocked. But the ways in which the LePage administration have really attacked the food stamp and undermined the food stamp program include the $5,000 asset test. So if people have more than $5,000 in assets, they're disallowed from being on SNAP. And this is, especially difficult for families that, for instance, have two cars that work in different places. For instance, if you live in Bangor and you work, one, family member works in Ellsworth and the other works in Dover Foxcroft, you need two cars. But if those cars are each worth more than $5,000, you lose your food stamps. And this also flies in the face of, people who are trying to save up in order to, get their finances in a better spot. So that's one measure. Another is stopping the exemption that Maine had for work requirements. So people are now required to, if they don't work, they're required to go to a volunteer. And that can be very difficult for people, especially in the rural places. Like, for instance, if you live up around Milo and the only volunteer opportunities are in Bangor, to commute to Bangor just doesn't make sense. Another one is the process. Last December in 2015, Maine was actually threatened with federal fines because we're the worst in the nation for processing applicants to food stamps. In February of 2016, LePage administration made it so that people have to report to the DHHS if your income is changed by $50 a month. And this is, I mean, speaking as a person who I don't like going to banks, I don't like going to such bureaucracies or dealing with insurance companies or the like, to call DHHS where oftentimes you're put on hold for half an hour, an hour, and you have to do that if your income changes by $50 in a month, which, I mean, that can happen if your pay period is different in a month, or if you happen to get extra work. So that's another piece. More recently in June, LePage threatened to end all SNAP programs in the state of Maine if the federal government didn't agree to prohibit soda and candy. And I think throughout all this, there's just been a drumbeat attack on, you know, people who receive these, you know, much-needed benefits as being poor and lazy, that they're somehow getting something over on the system. And, you know, and that's just not true. A lot of these benefits are because, you know, people have worked into the system. Maybe they need them because they're going back to school or some other hard times have happened to them. There's been a lot of job loss in the state. And I think SNAP is, you know, one way to look at it is it's an insurance program. And, you know, things happen. And just like with health insurance, if you break your arm, the insurance program should be there for people. And what's been happening is, you know, with the job losses in our state, which, you know, I think everybody knows have been, you know, very severe, especially in the paper industry and the wood products industry and other places, you know, we need these programs to help people out. And these programs have been under attack. So it's really made it hard for, you know, working families and low-income folks in the state of Maine.
And can you give us an idea of what numbers we're talking about since these various administrative changes have been made to diminish people's access to food stamps?
Yeah, I think we're looking at we were in the neighborhood of 229,000 people on SNAP, and that's decreased to just under 200,000. So there's a shrinkage in the number of people who are on SNAP.
So the forum that's happening this next Wednesday, October 19th, 9:30 to 1:30 at the Bangor Library is on food security and the minimum wage. So can you talk with us also coming up this election is a referendum on increasing the minimum wage. Talk with us about the connection between raising the minimum wage and food security.
Absolutely. And I'd also like to talk about, we're really going to have some great panelists at the forum on Wednesday. I think times have been tough for a lot of families in Maine, you know, without adequate supports to be able to get ahead. And one of the things that's, you know, been very difficult is the minimum wage. And we are really fortunate in the state of Maine that we have a clear vote on increasing the minimum wage. It's an unpolluted vote. Most other states have had a competing measure, kind of a poison pill. There is the Chamber of Commerce and others tried to put it on the ballot this year, and they were unsuccessful in that effort. So we've got a clean vote on increasing the minimum wage. And
what specifically is the language, and what kind of increase would we see when?
Absolutely. So the language is to increase the minimum wage for both regular employees as well as tipped employees, and it's to increase it to $9 in 2017, $10 in 2018, $11 in 2019, to $12 in 2020, and then it's tied to cost of living. With tipped employees, it goes $5 in 2017, then it increases $1 per year until 2024, when it reaches parity with minimum wage, and then it's tied to cost of living. So this is really a great measure, and it's really returning the minimum wage to what it used to be like in the 60s. In other words, the minimum wage, if in the late 60s, if it had the same purchasing power today as it did in the 1960s, it'd be $11 an hour. And what we're seeing in this country is just, you know, a ridiculous amount of money that's going to the very wealthy. One statistic, which is, I think, very telling, is the bonuses to Wall Street 2 years ago were $28.5 billion. These are just the bonuses to employees on Wall Street, and the 15 for the 1 million people. people who work full-time on minimum wage. There's 1.3 million workers in the United States working on minimum wage. Their total wages are $15 billion. So just the bonuses for those Wall Street employees was double the minimum, the amount of money received for all minimum wage workers across the country. Another, you know, sort of statistic that's come out recently is that the new income that's been generated since the Great Recession, 58% of that's gone to the top 1%. So what we're seeing across the country is, and in Maine as well, is there's been money generated in this economy, but it's flowing to smaller and smaller hands. And we think that's, you know, immoral. It really hurts people who need, you know, to have work pay, who work hard. And it's also bad for our economy because one of the things that, you know, economists see is that when you increase the minimum wage, people spend that money, they spend it in the local economy, and that helps the whole economy. And that's, you know, sort of been a core part of our economy for, you know, since the minimum wage started in the 1930s, is we increased the minimum wage, and it's been a positive for the economy as a whole.
What is the minimum wage right now in Maine, Jack, and do we have an idea of how many people work at that level?
Yeah, it's currently $7.50, and that's a good point. Is so the increase in minimum wage by 2020 would affect 191,000 Maine workers. So there's a real big effect here that would happen, and that's very important. And I think that the impact would be especially helpful for single parents and families. You know, the research on that is that, you know, for instance, a $3,000 increase in income for households earning less than $25,000 a year with a child in the home, age 5 or under, results in a 17% increase in the child's lifetime earnings on average. So if parents are making more money, who are working at the minimum wage level or just above, that has a huge impact on their child's ability to earn a decent wage in the future. So, you know, it's really investing in our people and investing in our communities and investing in our economy. It's a, you know, real, you know, smart thing to do. And the vast majority of people in Maine are supportive of it. So we're really happy about that.
So with the time we have left, but giving you hopefully enough time to talk about the forum, tell us about this forum on food security and the minimum wage and the different organizations that are involved, Maine Center for Economic Policy, Maine Equal Justice Partners, Eastern Maine Labor Council, obviously food and medicine.
Correct. Yeah, we're going to have Sarah Austin, who wrote a report for the Maine Center for Economic Policy, is going to speak, and it's really tremendous. She's coming up here. Chris Hasted from Maine Equal Justice Partners, who's extremely knowledgeable about SNAP programs and similar programs, is going to speak. We're going to have three minimum wage workers and SNAP recipients who, you know, are really tremendous people who have been organizing around this issue and have some you know, very powerful personal testimonies of what it's like to be a, you know, worker and be a parent on these, you know, in these conditions. We're also going to have Minister Arlene Tully from First United Methodist Church in Bangor, and Katie Curlew, who's a professor of psychology from University of Maine, Augusta. So, you know, we're really looking at these questions from a number of different perspectives, from, the economic perspective, from the spiritual perspective, from the, you know, psychological perspective of how changing these policies can really, you know, make a better, you know, a better community and world for us.
And can you give the details of it once again, please?
Oh, sure. It's from 9:30 to 11:30 at the Bangor Public Library, the meeting room on the first floor, on Wednesday, October 19th.
Great. Jack McKay, anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think one of the takeaways that, you know, and to look at this is just, you know, thinking about the change that's happened is, you know, how Maine went from 33rd to third worst in the nation. I mean, that's just a staggering change in public policy. And it's like going from a B-plus student to an F. And I think, you know, I think it really should give us all cause for alarm and, you know, hopefully is a prompt that, you know, we have done differently. We did do differently 10 years ago. And we can do differently now. So I just encourage folks to learn more about the issues and become involved and, you know, make your voices heard on election as well as other times, because that's how we're going to really make things better.
Jack McKay, the Director of Food and Medicine and President of the Eastern Maine Labor Council, thank you very much for joining us today.
Great, thanks.
You were listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. On Tuesday, October 18th, Maine's Board of Environmental Protection will conduct a public hearing on the expansion of the Juniper Ridge landfill. It will take place at the Cross Insurance Center in Bangor. Starting at 9 a.m., applicants and interveners will present, and at 6 p.m., the public will be allowed to comment. We have by phone with us now Hillary Lister, a longtime activist on waste issues in Maine. We welcome you back to the program.
Good to be back on the show.
We wanted to touch base with you, Hillary, remind listeners about what this proposal is, this expansion proposal is, and what's at stake.
Definitely. So the Board of Environmental Protection is considering a request by Casella Waste Systems and the state of Maine to approximately double the size of the Juniper Ridge dump that's on the Old Town Alton border. If this was approved, it would make it most likely the largest landfill in New England, if not Northeast, for actively taking in more waste. This is something that Casella Waste has been pushing for a while. Casella has the contract to operate the state-owned landfill, and they are basically advising the state on how to do this expansion. So one of the interesting pieces of this is that you've had the attorney and lobbyist for Casella Waste speaking on behalf of the state for this expansion.
Because, again, it is a state of Maine landfill, so under those rules and regulations, presumably, but is run privately.
Yes, run privately, and the company that has the contract to run it is basically being given the blank check by the state to lay out how they want to run it, and the state is just going along with whatever the company says at this point. And hopefully this Board of Environmental Protection hearing will be a chance to question a lot of the stuff that's otherwise really been fast-tracked and kept from public being able to know what's happening and have any say in it.
So this is a DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, proposal proposed in adjunct, as you said, with Casella, but the Board of Environmental Protection is looking at the proposal. Can you explain about the process here, the state process?
Sure. Originally, this was going to go through the Department of Environmental Protection, which actually would have required more public participation to a degree. Instead, Casella pushed for it to actually be under the Board of Environmental Protection's jurisdiction, I think because it's almost an easier process. It works to Casella's favor in the fact that the Board of Environmental Protection does not normally handle such a detailed and complex major decision as this in permitting. This is normally under DEP jurisdiction, so I feel like they saw the fact that they could use this process to avoid having to go through additional steps for public involvement. Also, it doesn't hurt that on the Board of Environmental Protection, you have the chair, Jim Parker, who was CEO or founder of CES Engineering, which engineered the JRL dump. You also have one of the other board members who's the chair of Tri-County Waste, whose number one customer is Casella Waste Systems, but for whatever reason, they decided that neither of them need to recuse themselves from this decision. So you have two people who are pretty financially tied to this company already going to be voting on whether to grant this expansion permit.
And so the buck does stop there with the BEP. If that decision is made to go ahead, then the expansion will occur?
Yep, and that's one of the big issues with it going to the BEP. If it had gone through the Department of Environmental Protection, there would have been an appeals process afterwards. With it going through the Board of Environmental Protection, they are basically the appeals process there where you would go for an appeal. So it sort of skips around and makes it a lot more difficult to appeal the decision if it does go through.
So tell us more about this expansion, why the DEP is saying that it needs to happen. We know there are elements of capacity for out-of-state waste and a lot of controversy about what's considered in and out-of-state waste. And we know there's a lot of concern about water pollution to the groundwater with the current Juniper Ridge landfill and what an expansion would mean. Can you flesh out some of the salient issues with us? And I know we have a limited time today, yes. But list some of those for us.
So the argument for the expansion is that the state is going to run out of capacity to dispose its own waste if they don't rush and approve this. However, they've created this crisis situation by filling the landfill at a far faster rate than was originally discussed, primarily because they are taking in significant amounts of waste from out of state, especially construction and demolition debris. And also thanks to a change in Massachusetts law last year, which bans organics from going into a landfill, all of a sudden Maine is being the destination for all sorts of materials from Massachusetts that are banned from Massachusetts landfills. And the organics are some of the more problematic ones because they produce a lot of gas. So one thing we're looking at is a lot more gas-producing materials coming into the dump, which then leads to a lot more problems with water pollution. So one of the big pushes behind this is that Casella Waste is working on getting a pipeline built to send landfill gas from the dump in Old Town to University of Maine for heating and electric purposes. They were able to get the law changed a few years ago to classify landfill gas as Class 1 renewable energy and eligible for all sorts of subsidies. So now there's an incentive to send materials that will produce the most amount of gas possible to the dump where they can then capture the gas, pipe it, and sell electricity at a very inflated rate from it.
And talk with us more about the out-of-state waste versus in-state waste, how the state is supposed to only be dealing with in-state waste and how that change happens.
So when the dump initially got permitted, which was a very shady and behind-the-scenes deal in itself, one big selling point was it was going to be able to handle Maine waste for decades, and we finally had a solution for Maine waste, and that it was only going to accept Maine-generated waste. However, within the year following that, through rulemaking, the Department of Environmental Protection determined that any waste material that is processed in the state of Maine, once it's processed, it becomes Maine waste. So one of Casella's big investments is in various recycling companies, sorting companies, processing companies, where they can bring in a truckload of this waste from anywhere in the country, dump the truckload out, sort it for whatever valuable materials, metals, potentially recyclables, and then everything, now that it's been processed, can go back on another truck, and now it's magically Maine waste that can be disposed of in Juniper Ridge dump. And a good amount of this out-of-state waste is waste that's banned from disposal in surrounding states' landfills. So in addition to the organics, we're also getting medical waste coming in that in other states is much more strictly regulated, including medical waste from Canada, along with construction and demolition debris, which, again, is banned from landfilling in a good portion of New England states. It's banned from incineration in New Hampshire. It's really the bulky problem waste that, thanks to the creation of this dump, we now have an incentive to send this waste to Maine. Originally, when the dump was permitted, it was going to be part of a whole deal where the Old Town Mill could take this construction demolition debris, burn it for electricity, and then any resulting ash would go into the dump. They ended up having problems with that incinerator. It used to be located where I live in Athens. It was never designed to burn construction waste. Every time they try to burn construction waste in it, there's all sorts of problems. In Old Town, when they tried to do it there, it ended up sending a cloud of lead-filled soot over a neighboring town of Bradley. So now they are no longer burning this construction waste. They're just bringing it into the state, processing it by pulling out a few materials, and then using it actually as, they're counting it as daily cover on the dump. So at the end of the day, when they've put all the other trash in the dump, they cover it with a layer of construction debris, And they actually get to count that as recycling, which is ridiculous. And it's filling up the dump faster than anything else.
We only have a little time left. I'm sorry, Hillary Lister, but can you tell us about the hearing on Tuesday, what the public can hope to see if they're there and how they can participate if they'd like? And I'd like you to also talk again as we wrap up about what's at stake as far as water quality. But if you can first lay out quickly what the day will be and entail. Yep.
So Tuesday, the 18th at 6 o'clock, there's going to be a hearing open to the public at, and where any member of the public can present testimony on how this would impact them. And one of the most important issues to focus on is going to be water quality. They really are avoided talking about this at all or addressing it, even though CES Engineering has stated that they don't even really know where the breadrock lines are, how this would affect groundwater supplies. It's going to significantly increase the amount of leachate, the waste liquid that's generated underneath the dump that's currently just being collected and sent to the Old Town Wastewater Treatment Plant and discharged with pretty minimal treatment right into the Penobscot River. Already the EPA is looking at all of the toxins that are being discharged into the river due to extremely high rates of mercury and dioxin showing up in fish, and working on strengthening the rules and limiting what can go in. This would be increasing the amount of those toxins going right into the river, as well as with more gaseous materials, you have a lot more likelihood of contamination of the local groundwater supplies, and this is an area that's surrounded by residences, along with concerns about the gas itself. They've had a number of gas leaks, violated air quality levels for some pretty toxic substances that shouldn't be going into a residential area.
There is also a concern about the impacts on the Penobscot tribe. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so one of the big concerns with this is just environmental justice concerns, where this expansion and the wastewater discharge would be disproportionately impacting the Penobscot Nation community that's already bearing the brunt of a number of major toxic releases, and the agencies are supposed to look at environmental justice in making a decision whether to grant this permit or not if it places a disproportionate burden on people who are already having basically being targeted for this, and where you're already seeing extremely high cancer rates, much higher than surrounding areas, and a number of other health problems. That really needs to be brought out, that this is placing an undue burden on people who are already bearing the brunt of so many of these toxic projects. Local people really need to have a voice in this and not just be hidden in the background the way they have been prior to this. The hearing is at the Cross Insurance Center in Bangor. Also, before that public portion during the day, there is an intervener's hearing, which is some of the local people who've been able to show that this would affect them in a very specific way. We're able to get intervener status, so they'll be presenting a lot more detailed testimony and doing cross-examination there. But for members of the public, it will be 6 o'clock on Tuesday, and if they don't get through everyone on that Tuesday, they'll be bringing people back on Wednesday.
And written comments can be submitted before Wednesday as well to the Board of Environmental Protection?
Yes, they can be submitted. So, NIPS can be sent up to 5 o'clock on October 19th to Kathy Tarbuck at maine.gov. It's kathy.tarbuck@maine.gov. And you can find out more information on the maine.gov/DEP site under Juniper Ridge Landfill Expansion Project.
Anything else that you want to add in closing?
But anyone who could be affected by this, definitely get the word out. And if you can't make it there on that day, at least get written comments in and stay involved in the process, because this has only been able to get as far as it has because they've been able to shut people out of the process. So anytime people really have a chance, it's going to be really important just to get this on the record at least.
Hillary Lister, thank you so much for joining us with that update today.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. You can listen to archives of this and other locally produced public affairs programming at weru.org.